Hollywood is bussing it to Hollywood. Showing the ways, moving to Hollywood is hopping it to Hollywood.
Good afternoon and welcome to another fantastic episode of How Betty Davis Saved My Life. I am so happy to be here with you. You don't know how happy I am in Georgia to be with you. We live in Texas, and let me just tell you, it's been a roller coaster ride. Poor Georgia. Oh, Georgia, how you doing?
You know, I tell you what, it was a real challenge in an ordeal at some times, but you know, I just made it through one day at a time, and I'm just so happy to see the sunshine and warmer temperatures again.
Amen, sister. Amen to that. Yeah, we were caught in that Texas winter storm recently, and it was a butt kicker. I fared out pretty well. We lost power, you know, for most of the day, then it would get it back at night, and it cut it off. But poor Georgia. Georgia, you were like in a wilderness. You went back to like caveman times for real. Like your phone cut out and like she lost all contact with the outside world. It was crazy. She had to email people to communicate. That was crazy.
You're right. I was totally off the grid. It was like living in solitary confinement in a cold, dark cave.
Yes.
I was all back to the 1800s. I was huddled under piles of blankets. And I would light a candle. That was my only source of heat or light. And I read by candlelight like Abraham Lincoln. So it was like I went through a time capsule back to the
1800s. You know, Georgia and I are friends, obviously. And it's not funny. I'm not laughing at her. But I'm telling you, it was crazy. And when she told me I got this, because I had texted you, like, early on into it, like, because, you know, she doesn't live, we don't live far from each other. And so I texted her, see how she was doing. So I'm thinking you didn't, you know, went by one of your friends or family house and you just, you know, doing what you do or whatever. Then I get this email from her, like, a day or two later, like, oh, I don't have anything. I can't communicate. The phone's conked out. And that's how the email. And I'm just sitting there like, WT, you know what? And I'm like, so everybody was helpless. Well, anyway, yeah, everybody's seen the story. So our hearts and prayers go out to our Texas fellow Texans and anybody else who's going through weather incidents or just life in general. Life's kicking your butt. Sit down, listen to us for a hot minute, try to forget what's going on and escape like Hollywood always was and is, escape into Hollywood fantasy. Thank you. Welcome to another episode of How Betty Davis Saved My Life, Life Lessons from Classic Hollywood. And again, I am Moya, and this Rough Rider, what is your name? Rough Rider, Pioneer Woman?
Georgia.
The survivalist. Well, you are a former military, so this should have been old hat to you.
Yeah, you know, and it taught me that I could get through anything, you know, even right. Without the help of the Cajun Navy. I saved my legs for them just in case they showed up. But yes, I went into survival mode.
Oh my, girl, that's a good one. You have to put that somewhere. I shaved my legs for the Cajun Navy just in case they should. We got to put that on a cup or a t-shirt or something because that is rich. That is absolutely hilarious. So we have a good movie for you. And we were going to do this movie, but things happened. Like I said, poor Georgia's tech went out. But we were going to do this movie. And like I said, we just couldn't do it. But what is our movie for today, Georgia?
The Breaking Point.
Yes.
Made in 1950.
Yes, yes. Starring who?
John Garfield. Mm-hmm. And it also has Felix Thaxter and Patricia Neal, Juano Hernandez, and the director is Michael Curtiz.
Yes, the infamous... but brilliant director Michael Curtiz, and one of my favorite all-time character actors, and I don't know if you really could call him a character because he was a lead actor for a long time, Wallace Ford. Really underrated. actor. He was an everyman actor. He could do it all, as far as the range of acting, but love. And I, this is one of my favorite characters for him. And it's, well, Georgia, this is one of my favorite movies, Breaking Point. I love this movie. So tell us a little bit about it.
I love this movie too, Moya. This movie takes place in Newport, California, not long after World War II. Mm-hmm. John Garfield plays Harry Morgan, and he's a Navy veteran, and he runs this, he operates a boat charter, and he takes fishing trips near his home in Newport, California, and also back and forth to Mexico. And he's really struggling to support his wife and two children. And without getting into it, this man becomes increasingly, there's desperation, there are moral dilemmas, there's danger at every turn for he and his first mate. And this movie is riveting. There is so much action in it.
Yes.
The characters are extremely well done. Acting is just the best you'll ever see. Yes. I love this movie. It is so worth your time.
Right.
It should be a lot more well known and a lot more appreciated than it is. We need to give it some love.
Yes. And you mentioned John Garfield, again, one of my favorite actors. He is the king, in my opinion, of unsung, forgotten acting greats. Whenever you see him, it's an acting clinic. And he's really forgotten I don't know why. I mean, no, he wasn't the best looking dude. I don't think he was that tall. But, I mean, like him, and more people know Frederick March, but he's another acting great that a lot of people forget about. Love John Garfield. He was another one could do it all. He literally could do it all.
Well, you know, Moya, the thing about him is that he doesn't act. He is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He is phenomenal in this role because, yeah, he usually plays this type of guy who's kind of tough talking and very masculine. He is. But, you know, the thing that really stands out about this guy is that he can make you feel such intensity and such immediacy in a role.
Yes.
You feel like you're just right there.
Right.
And it's not acting, and you just get so caught up with what he does. But, you know, the tragedy about this is that he died when he was only 39.
He was really young.
This movie.
Yes.
And according to his daughter, who was also an actress, she said of all the movies that he did, she said, this was the one he was proudest of, and this was his favorite performance of all the movies he did. And that's really saying something.
Right. He's a powerhouse.
He's got a beautiful, powerful body of work here. And it's too bad that his career had been cut short because of the, you probably heard about the Red Scare. You know, there was McCarthyism going on. There were trials. There were people in Hollywood who were being you know, brought to trial because they were accused of being communists.
Right.
And John Garfield himself really wasn't all that political, but his wife was. And so, of course, they associated him with her.
Right.
And unfortunately, this movie was not promoted very well by the studio head, Jack Warner. And unfortunately, what happened was he was so afraid of the communist stigma that he put almost no money into the promotion and publicity of this film. And he also canceled Garfield's contract for another picture.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's how much power he wielded. And so that's why you have such a great movie, which was based on To Have and Have Not, but they couldn't use that name because there was another movie previous to that that had the name.
Right.
But this movie was much more faithful to the story, and Hemingway liked this movie much better.
Right. And you mentioned Hemingway, I hope I haven't missed it. There's going to be a documentary about him coming up on PBS. I don't know what they call it in your neck of the woods, everybody else, but PBS. And I can't wait to see that. I hope I didn't miss it. I'll have to look it up, but I'm a huge Hemingway fan. You know, you might not agree with everything he thought or believed, but the man could write, and that's all I care about. I love to write. I like to, you know, pin my thoughts down, but the man was an excellent storyteller, and he captured his times, you know, because he was adventurous, been, you know, if you don't know Ernest Hemingway, you know, go look him up. But, you know, he was able to capture his time. Him and Steinbeck, two of my favorite writers in that kind of same school, you know, because they just knew how to tell a story. And it could take something like this story and Breaking Point. And it was serious stuff. And we're gonna walk the line, you know. We're gonna we always have to walk the line here on How Betty Davis Saved My Life. And don't forget, we're on Facebook. Please like us, subscribe to us. We're on all your listening platforms. Please subscribe to our podcast. We're on Facebook at How Betty Davis Saved My Life. Please like us. We have a couple of videos up on YouTube, also at How Betty Davis Saved My Life. Please like and subscribe those as well. But they can, him and Steinbeck could take, and this, like I said, we don't want to get too deep because we don't want to give away too much, but they could take something seemingly like everyday man or everyday woman issues and draw the reader or the watcher in, the audience in, like nobody else could, in my opinion, you know. And you didn't necessarily have to have been through what the characters were going through, but you could relate. And like you said, to get Garfield was pitch perfect casting, because like George, you said it, this man's, all of his performances, he was the character and he drew you in. And that's why I am one of his biggest fans.
You know, one of the things that I really have to give him props for was he was virtually the producer of this film. Mm-hmm. And so he had a lot of say so. And when they were casting the role of his first mate, his closest friend, he chose an Afro-Puerto Rican man for the role. And his name was Juano Hernandez. And they also had playing his son, his real life son, Juan, in the role. And one of the things that I thought really was very telling about his character, John Garfield, the man, was that he said, I want a black man to play this role. And mm-hmm. he expanded on the role, beefed it up, because he wanted the relationship between the two of them to be, you know, really worth something, an integral part of the whole movie.
Right.
And so the studio did not like the idea of him doing that. And they tried to talk him out of it. But he wouldn't give in. So eventually the studio gave up on that. Mm-hmm. And so you see at the time, and this is when you weren't seeing this happen so much, but he made sure that the person that he played was portrayed as a dignified, right, intelligent person, hardworking, a very noble person is the way I would describe him. If I had to pick one word, I'd say he was very noble.
Right.
But I really had to give him props for that. But I have to say, when you watch this movie, you will not expect the final scene. It is powerful. It is a gut punch.
Right, right.
And I just want to tell you that. So,
yeah, it's something else.
Yeah, it's indelible. It will not leave your memory.
Right. And what causes the final scene, that's a gut punch as well. You know, the circumstances that lead to that. This is not a typical Hollywood movie, and you know, Jack Warner, you know, you so-and-so, you know, that's, you know, and that's why our girl Betty, our namesake show, you know, she would fight with him because, you know, he was always concerned about the image. He was more concerned about the image and the business than the content of what Warner Brothers was producing. And this movie is just so indignant. I'm not surprised that what you just said, the background of why they didn't promote, because had they promoted this movie, this would have, if not been a best Oscar contender, you know, I don't know what was out that year, you know, you're the research department, but it would have certainly, let's just say it would have been an Oscar contender. Walter Brennan won, I think, for To Have and Have Not, won his first Oscars, I think. Juano Hernandez certainly should have been nominated. Because he was Jiminy Cricket. Let me just say this. For those of you who are Pinocchio fans, especially the Disney version, Juano Hernandez was the conscience of this movie. He was Jiminy Cricket to Garfield's Pinocchio. And without being preachy or whatever, but he was, so I'm a huge fan of his. So I saw him in his first movie. So he had been around since the silent era. I actually saw him in his first movie called Girl from Chicago. It's, I believe it was an Oscar Michu movie. Oscar Michu, one of the first black directors, had his own production studio in Hollywood. I saw that movie, Georgia, but I did not recognize Juano Hernandez. So I was like, I have to go back and see it. But I saw him. So Georgia and I are going to do Intruder in the Dust. If you have not seen Intruder in the Dust, audience, you have to see. Again, Juano Hernandez steals the show. It's very subtle. I mean, he's like Garfield. Every time they go on the screen, they win the award. They win the Oscar. He was in Trial, where he played the judge, another 1950s movie. That was a risk because they had a black man in charge of the trial, and it was a racially charged movie, very good movie. Hopefully we'll get to that one too. Juano Hernandez has a scene in that movie where he has to control himself against somebody being really bigoted towards him whilst he's on the bench. It is another acting clinic. So, Georgia, this movie here, like, I could watch this movie at least once a month.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, what I also liked about this movie was the contrast between the two main female characters.
Oh, yes, we have to talk about that. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Against the Patricia Neal character, Leona Charles.
Right.
Oh, what a contrast.
Yes.
The acting was so amazing. You got a boozy floozy. I mean, she's the temptress, the homewrecker. Then you have this wife, but I thought that their marriage, the way they portrayed it.
It was beautiful. Really sweet.
It was beautiful.
Right.
It was, so beautiful. And then the conversation that the two women have. Every woman understands.
Yes.
When those two have that every woman gets it. And then John Garfield's character sitting there going,
clueless. Like
about?
Most men.
Totally off his head. He doesn't get it, but yeah. The women get it.
Yeah, like most men, when... You know, it's got to go. And I'm not a man basher or a man hater at all. I can't stand when women in society does that to men. But I will say this. When women are talking, men most of the time don't get what we're saying. Because especially if we're talking about that man, they don't get it. Unless they are caught red-handed and we're being very obvious and they're guilty. Let me just say that. Men don't get it. And a man wrote this screenplay, and I was shocked that he would understand how women can verbally joust and be the man is oblivious. So I love this. So you caught that scene too with the two women. Girl, I love that scene. That and George, you know what I want to point? I said, this is how not to be a real housewife of fill in the blank. This is how you don't judge, and we all know that's a bunch of crap, BS, fakery on TV. But this is how you go at it with another woman about your man, and you don't jump across the table. You ain't fighting, throwing shoes, and your hair weave, and your bee, and your pearls. This is just bringing women down, let alone humanity, just bringing women down all together. This is how you talk about your man or a man without making a total ass out yourself. So I love these women. Not a punch thrown. But honey, they landed some punches, didn't they?
They really did. And you know, Patricia Neal went on to become the best actress in the year 1963 for the movie Head. But yes.
She was wonderful in that.
Two of them, this is classic.
Yes.
You have to watch this.
Right. And I'm a huge Patricia Neal fan. And they don't show enough of her movies as well. Because to me, she's got that Barbara Stanwyck, Betty Davis type vibe. She is a wonderful actress, you know, but she's a kind of an unsung, got lost in the sauce type actress. But I love her too. And Phyllis Thaxter, not a huge star, not a household name, but you can catch a lot of her television work.
Yeah.
And she is in an episode, I think, of Alfred Hitchcock. And yes, guys, as you can tell, I watch a lot of TV and movies. I love TV and movies. But and where she, I don't want to give it away, but she's involved in a murder with some adultery type stuff. And she played, butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. She was so super cool. So, and so this is young Phyllis Thaxter here, but she was a ride or die chick. She was down for her man in this movie, and I loved her for. She should have got a nominee. She was wonderful. What do you think about when she dyed her hair, girl? I fell out.
Oh my gosh,
that was so funny. That was hilarious.
It was funny, but you know, like first, you know, the reaction she was getting, and I and I kept getting, oh no, this is more and more and more humiliating, you know. And she's trying so hard.
She's trying so hard.
John Garfield's reaction was so sweet. You know,
it was so sweet.
Going, oh, you, it was so sweet. He goes, oh, honey, yeah, you look good. Oh, you know, and I thought that was so endearing and so sweet of him to say that.
Right.
But you know, what they say, the old saying is, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yes.
She goes, you know, if that's what he's attracted to,
right,
that's what I'm going to be.
Right.
He's going to be, I'm going to make him attracted to me.
Right.
And you know, God bless her. You know?
And again, a man wrote this screenplay. How did he know that's what women do? When we put on our drag, you know, if you got a man or you're trying to get a man, yes, you are putting it on for men. But we also dress for each other, too, for other women, because you are competing, whether you know it or not. Those of us who still care, because I'm getting to that point, Georgia. I don't know about you, girl. I'm doing everything not to go outside naked. And that wouldn't be good for anybody involved. But I'm getting to that point in my life. I really don't give a damn anymore. I'm like, long as I don't stink, long as I've bathed, I think everybody's okay. That's my goal. Let me not smell. Cause I'm
that's a high bar you set for yourself, Moya.
Because it's like, just give me a, you know, and another video we have coming up, we're going to do Mae West. We're doing a video for when we did pre-code with Mae West. And I have something called I Give Up Clothes. But I get it. I hope I don't give up. But I get it when women give up. I get it when we put on a sweatpants and a t-shirt. You know, I get it. But ladies, we got to try to hold on to some femininity. But for this screenwriter, and his name is escaping me. I have it somewhere in my notes. The screenwriter, to know women, we do dress for each other. We do compete with our clothes and our look. We do it. It's real.
You guys taking notes there? They don't line you up in junior high school in a gym and teach you all these things about.
No.
So you learn these are secrets, confessions.
Yes, yes, yes.
To look into the psyche of women.
Yes.
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 We do think that way.
We do. We do. I mean, look, I don't do it as hard as I used to. Girl, I would compete with the bride. And I'm with Katharine Hepburn. He asked her why didn't she attend the Oscars? She said, well, I either want to be the bride or the corpse. And I was like, see, I'm not a huge fan, but I get it. I get it. So I don't want all eyes on me, like Tupac said, all eyes on me. And I'm getting older and I don't care as much. But I get why that woman dyed her hair. Because, Georgia, don't you think?
Yes.
Don't you think? And, me and you are kind of an echo chamber. But you said it. If that's what my man likes, you better. I mean, it's in black and white, this movie, so you can't really tell what she looked like. But you could tell it was too much. It was not flattering. But she was trying. Let's go with that. She was trying. So I agree with that. I agree with her choice to try.
Yeah, and the little daughters, you know, if you want the truth, it's to ask your child.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And that's what happens.
Yes.
Like, that's not you. Oh, boy.
No. You like when we'll cut all, oh, God forbid if you cut all your hair off. You're the worst person in the world. Well, George's hair, because of COVID, George's hair is almost down to her butt. I have no hair because I was telling her the story. So she and I are in extremes. I don't want to comb my hair at all, so I cut it all off. And poor Georgia can't get to her hairdresser, so she's Lady Godiva. Oh my gosh, we struggling here, girl. We struggling. The struggle is real. The aesthetic struggle is real, people. And I know y'all can relate out there in podcast land. But I don't know. Back to the movie, Georgia, because we kind of run. We got a little time left. So we don't want to give away too much, you know, and if we keep talking, Georgia, we'll give away too much, But I just, so I'm going to tell you another one of my most favorite scenes in all of my Hollywood movie watching, the scene with Wallace Ford, his last scene during the heist. Oh, girl, because I'm such a huge Wallace Ford fan, and he should have gotten several awards. But girl, yes, that last scene during the heist when he's running, girl, I don't know why, something sadistic about me. I love that damn scene. And I don't want to say I'm not going to say what happened to him. But wasn't that was so real. It was like watching, because there are several heist movies. There's a really good one with Sterling Hayden. I can't remember the name, where they rob a racetrack or something. I can't remember. They rob something. I don't remember. But anyway, that's a really good heist one. But this is a really short heist scene. But it's like you're watching a real heist scene and the consequences of it. It was so good. I love Wallace Ford. Did I say I love Wallace Ford? Who had a very tragic upbringing too, by the way.
Oh, I didn't realize that. But man, he plays that character so well.
Oh, a sleaze. He was one of the best sleazes.
He was a slime ball attorney. Ooh, but man, did he play that good.
Yes. Boy. Yes.
To perfection. Even if you don't watch the movie for anything else. I mean, so this movie has so many fantastic performances on so many levels, but yes, we don't want to shortchange the wonderful Wallace Ford for the fantastic portrayal he does of this very pivotal character.
Right. Everybody thinks of other people, and they think of famous sleazeballs and, Peter Lorre in a lot of movies, but, he's just off the top of my head. But he was this guy... He was one of the great sleazeballs of cinematic history, but like I said, this movie isn't that well known. What about another part that I don't want to give away too much, but again, pitch perfect acting by Garfield, when he finds out his reaction to a friend's murder is textbook acting. Again, this is one of the movies, you have to pay attention. You don't be texting on the phone or nothing like that or checking your social media. You have to pay attention. When Garfield finds out about a friend's murder, George, I'm telling you, this movie is, you're watching, and that's what I love about Hemingway and Curtiz's perfect pairing, because you are watching a slice of life unfold.
Much about this, it's gritty, it's riveting, it's realistic, there's adventure in it, there's action. I felt this movie had everything in it, but in a way it was ahead of its time.
It was
there was, if you want a thriller, if you want something suspenseful, I mean, this is a roller coaster ride. Hold on. It's gonna take off. You're just gonna be holding on.
Right.
You can't, just when you think you know right. what's gonna happen, right. They pull the rug out from under you.
Right.
So the ending, nothing about this is predictable.
Nothing.
Which is one of the things I really like about it.
Yes. When I first saw it, I was shocked at everything that was supposed to be shocking. And I was hurt, especially the last scene. Like I said, we're not going to tell you. But I remember rewinding it several times to make sure that was really the end of the damn movie. Because I was like, this cannot be how this movie ends like this. But when we did Oxbow Incident, it is a gut puncher. There are no easy answers in this movie, Georgia.
It's so true. So true. I think one of the reasons why you have such a visceral reaction to it is because it is so, you connect to it. The director and the actors are so good. They make you feel connected the whole time.
Yes.
You do.
Yes.
You feel that way. And I think that's the reason why you're that way. When you see it, it just doesn't leave you. The movie stays with you.
Right. And you keep saying, dude, don't do this. But you have to put yourself, this guy, that's why it's called a breaking point. This guy was under so much freaking pressure from his home life, work life. You cannot judge this guy for the choices that he makes, because you can't say, I always like to say, don't say what you won't do. Say what you would think you would do, say what you would like to do in that situation, but you can never say what you won't do. And that's why I love this movie. The dialogue was so sharp. Oh man, the dialogue was sharp, sharp, sharp.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
So we're almost at our breaking point, Georgia, before we go, because if we keep talking, I'm telling you, we there's a lot of landmines here, store plot landmines. Georgia, I'm gonna let you close it out.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you all, this was maybe the second John Garfield movie I'd seen, because I'd seen him in The Four Daughters.
Oh yeah.
And you have to watch this man act.
Yes.
He is just by himself, what he brings to a role. He is amazing. He's unforgettable. This, yes. Because of this movie, I now want to see everything he does.
That's what he does. Yes.
I want to watch every single yes. thing this man does.
Yes.
And and that's what I just wanted to leave you with, if nothing else.
And last thing, we're going to do The Postman Always Rings Twice with he and Lana Turner. A lot of good backstory with that. And so that'll be coming up hopefully really soon. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at the same name. This is Life Lessons from Classic Hollywood. We are also on YouTube now. We're doing a few videos, so please subscribe and like those as well. We are on iHeart. We're on Castos. We are on Google Play. We are also on, I am forgetting one, but we're on most listening platforms. So check us out on there. For Georgia, I am Moya. And thank you for listening to How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Looking forward to being with you guys again. Please let us know how you're doing and what you think of all these fantastic movies. Take care.